Kenya, a land of beauty, resilience, and secrets. Behind every headline is a hidden story. Behind every crime, a consequence. Welcome to Crime and Consequences, KE, the podcast that pulls back the curtain on the country's most chilling crimes, untold conspiracies, and the ripple effects that follow. I'm your host, Ndjeri Mbogwa, a freelance journalist from Kenya and a true crime enthusiast. And in this world, nothing stays buried forever. Players today are Ivy Wangeshi, the victim, and Naftali Kinuthia, the murderer. Ivy Wangeshi was a 24-year-old med student at Moi University. She was pursuing a degree in Bachelor of Science, Bachelor of Surgery, which is a standard medical degree to practice medicine in the country of Kenya. And Ivy was in her sixth day of study, so she just had two more years left, and then she would have gone and done her clinicals, I think, and then became a doctor. So Ivy, growing up, she grew up in Thika, and she was known as Tesh by her friends. She was born in 1994, and she met Naftali in 1998 when she attended Joyland Academy for nursery school. She was only there for a couple of years. She was there between 98 and 2003, and then she moved on to another school. For high school, she attended the very, very famous Alliance Girls High School, where she got straight A's in her KCSE, and that is how she landed herself a spot at Moi University. People who knew Ivy from way back then, they described her as a hardworking, focused student who was deeply passionate about pursuing a career in medicine because she wanted to help people. So throughout her life, Ivy was known for her very calm and composed demeanor. Neighbors in Makongeni actually recall her as a very good neighbor who during the holidays, you know, she wasn't doing too much. She was just focused on her schooling, and they would occasionally see her going to church with her parents. And now, so as I previously mentioned, Ivy and Naftali, their history dates back to 1998. When Ivy joined Joyland Academy for nursery school. Naftali was already in Joyland Academy, and at this time in 98, he's said to have been in class 2. And even then, when they were very, very young, Naftali said to have really, really liked Ivy. This is because he would do things like securing a bus seat for her or saving a spot for her at lunch, you know, so that she would get... when she was out from a class, she would come, and then, you know, he would be like, yeah, you know, just come learn with me, it's fine. I saved a spot for you, blah, blah, blah. So the two of them became friends, even when they were that young. And they would hang out together at Naftali's father bookstore, even after Ivy left Joyland. So when I was doing my research, I found out that Ivy's mom actually used to buy books from Naftali's dad's bookstore, which is, again, I assume why the parents let them hang out together. Even after Ivy went to another school. So both are very gifted in academics, so they're very friendly. You know, they're doing life together, they're kids, they're growing up together. And eventually, they go to high school. Ivy goes to Alliance. I'm not really sure where Naftali went, but then after high school, Ivy goes all the way to Eldoret, to Moi University for med school. And Naftali doesn't go too far from Thika. He goes to Juja. And he pursues a degree in computer tech at JQuat. So because computer tech is a four-year degree, med school is an eight-year degree. So Naftali finishes computer tech in 2014, moves to Nairobi, opens a computer shop at Jamia Mo. At this time, Ivy is 300 kilometers away from Naftali. But because they're friends, you know, they've grown up together. I'm sure all of us have, you know, that one friend that we've known since forever. You know, they've seen us through every single stage in life. So Ivy and Naftali are said to have remained close. You know, they would occasionally talk on the phone. He would call her, he would text her. Sometimes they would even meet up. But tale as old as time. As time went by, Naftali began to develop feelings for Ivy. And the friendship started to change around 2017 when he began to actively pursue her romantically. So in one incident, this I got from the court documents, a witness was giving an example of an incident of their relationship. So they were trying to explain the nature of Ivy and Naftali's relationship, because when this case broke in the country, that was one of the things that there was a lot of controversy around, was the nature of the relationship. So this friend says that around 2017, and this is when, you know, Naftali had begun to pursue Ivy romantically. Ivy and the friend are somewhere in Limuru Forest. They're having fun. And then it gets to around 8 p.m. And if you know the geography of Kenya, you do know that Eldoret is a bit far from Limuru. So Ivy tells her friend, you know what, but they have a friend. He lives in Nairobi. And, you know, we can just go, you know, crash at his for the night. And then we can go back to Ildikesho. So the friend is like, yeah, fine. You just call him. And then if he agrees, we'll just go to Nai. Because the distance and the time it takes to get to Nairobi from Limuru is way, way shorter than the time it would have taken them to get from Limuru all the way to Eldoret, which is where Ivy studied. So Ivy calls Naftali, I'm sorry. And Naftali is like, yeah, of course you guys can come. You know, you can come crush a mine. It's fine, no problem. So they take him out from Limuru. They get to his place somewhere in Nairobi. And the friend says, because she was a witness for the prosecution, she says that night, Naftali slept on the couch and then Ivy and her friend slept in his bed together. So the friend did not witness them being romantic in any kind of way. It was, for her, it was a platonic relationship and there was nothing sexual going on between them, at least as far as she was concerned or what she saw. And then a court document stated that the accused is said by the witness to have always craved for a love relationship with the deceased, but the deceased was firmly adamant. He generously showered her with lunch offers and gifts, just in an effort to try and woo her and be like, you know, I'm doing all these things for you and I've been doing things for you since we were kids. You know, I've always been here for you. I've always been here. You know, we can make a very good couple together, blah, blah, blah. Love me, love me, love me. So he's giving her gifts. He's sending her lunch money. He's taking her to, like, she's doing all these things for her just to get some sort of favor in her eyes. But Ivy is not interested. And one thing that irritates me, just because I've been born and raised in Kenyan society, one thing that irritates me about Kenyan men is that they do not know how to take no as a complete sentence, you know. And I'm sure that at this time, Naftali was probably thinking that Ivy's playing hard to get, but she clearly was not. She didn't want him, you know. And about a year later, it's 2018. He's been trying to get her since 2017. She's been saying, no, 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 no. You'll be just friends, you know. Maybe, like, you know, you're almost like a brother to me or something like that. So in 2018, Ivy starts to get frustrated because he's not stopping. He's, you know, if anything, I can assume that the more he was rejected, the worse and more intense he got, because he probably thought that the more he did, you know, the more she would like her or something. But in 2018, their friendship begins to suffer. That same year, in 2018, I'm guessing business is going well for Naftali, so he buys a car. And without telling Ivy, he decides, you know what, I'm going to make the 6-hour drive from Nairobi to Eldoret, get to Eldoret town, then make that kalonka drive all the way to Moi University. And I'm going to go see Ivy. And I'm sure when she sees me in this new car, she's finally going to accept me. She's going to say yes. So he gets there and he calls her, he texts her, whatever. And she's like, nah, like, I'm in med school. What do you mean you just popped up? You know, I don't like it when people just come. I don't have time. Like, you have to tell me, we have to plan it out so that I can be ready. And I can even tell you if I want to see you in the first place. And again, remember that at this time, their relationship is suffering because Naftali is not understanding that no is a very complete sentence. So he goes to see her and initially she refuses to see him. As I've said, she's like, you just can't pop up here and announce and then expect just to take up my time. So he insists and insists. He's like, no, I drove all this way. Just please come. You know, we've been friends for so long. Just please come. Just let me take you out to lunch. Celebrate the fact that I have this new car, whatever, whatever. And then Ivy's like, you know what? Fine. I'm coming, but I'm coming with a friend. So Naphtali takes Ivy and a friend who was not named. He takes them to Rupa Mall in LD. After this outing, again, remember, this is somebody who was initially rejected and you really had to press Ivy to go with him. So after he takes the friend and Ivy to lunch and they're driving back, you know, he probably waits for the friend to get out of the car and he's, you know, again, maybe trying to convince Ivy that, you know, why I'm the right man for you. I've known you all your life, blah, blah, blah. And he tries to solicit sex from Ivy. And of course, this girl has been telling you that she doesn't want you from the beginning. So of course, Ivy's like, no, what do you mean? And he insults her. And this is where I started to kind of think, because already his insistence and how much he's been doing it, his insistence on Ivy, it's giving obsessive. You know, you've been going after this girl for 1 year. She doesn't want you. You get her car, the first thing you think about is driving 6 hours to go see her. You don't even tell her. You just show up there and you're expecting that she's going to be so happy to see you or whatever. And then the delusion of after being rejected, and then you take her to the mall, you probably buy her some lunch, and now you're like, you know, now that I've done this, now she will say yes. So, of course, Ivy says no. Naphtali doesn't take this rejection well, and he really insults her. And he continues the insults via text. So he sends her very abusive text. And this is where, from my research, this is the first time that the documents state that she blocked him just because of how abusive he was being. So he's blocked because, you know, he's being an a-hole. And the next day, Ivy and her friend needed to go to Nairobi. I don't know if this is the same friend from 2017 that she had gone to Limuru with. That was not clear from the documents or from my research. But we do know that the next day, after this day in 2018, he'd come and announced taking them to Rupa Mall, tried to sleep with her. She said no. So the next day he's like, Ivy needs to go to Nairobi. And because I was wondering how he would have known. But I'm guessing that as they were having their outing the previous day at Rupa Mall, either Ivy or the friend mentioned that, yeah, Kesha to Nairobi. So remember that Naphtali is blocked from Ivy's phone. So her and the friend needed to go to Nairobi and he insisted. And I'm guessing he used the friend's phone. So because he's blocked from Ivy's phone. So he insisted that he wanted to be the one to take them. Let me take you. Let me show you how much of a nice guy I am. I'm a good guy. I came here for you. I did this for you. And I'm going to do this for you. Even if you say no. You know, he's probably thinking in his head that she's just playing hard to get. And the more he does for her, the more she's going to see how much, you know, he loves her probably. And then she's just going to want to be with him. And again, it's annoying me because no is a complete sentence. I don't think that in this day and age, with everything that we know about the patriarchy, about feminism, I don't think there are any women who are just playing hard to get, because you know how dangerous that can get for you as a girl, you know, because of the very fragile and toxic masculine ego the Kenyan men are socialized and conditioned into. So anyway, he somehow insists and somehow, he uses the friend that Ivy is with to convince Ivy, you know, just let him take us tonight. Here's the car. We don't have to pay for the fare. You know, we don't have to be in a mat, you know. So at least I'll be there with you. We'll be together. You don't even have to talk to him. So through the whole drive, the friend sits in the front with Naphtali and Ivy sits in the back. And the friend, who was also a witness, says that the two of them did not speak from Eldoret all the way to Nairobi. So maybe Naphtali was talking to the friend and then the friend was talking back. And then another thing, because Naphtali was really giving narcissism vibes. And a thing that I know for sure that narcissists do is that when other people are around, they are going to be their best selves. They're going to be so good. Because they already know how awful that they have been to you. But the thing that matters most to them is not how you feel or the consequences of whatever it is they have done. It is the perception other people have of them. That is the thing that's very important to them. So I'm thinking this is why, even after insulting her the previous night, he has the guts to come back and be like, you know what, I'm going to take you and your friend to Nairobi. Because I'm such a nice guy. I'm such a good guy. I would do anything for you. So yeah, they go to Nairobi. He takes them to Nairobi. They don't talk throughout the whole time. And they get to Nairobi, and yeah, we don't know much about what happened throughout that. But then there's another incident, and this is a different time. So Naftali calls Ivy's friend again. So I really was trying to piece together if this friend being mentioned through the whole story is the same friend that Ivy went with to Limuru Forest, but I'm not clear about that. But we do know that they are friends who are not named, but they are friends. So Ivy's with a friend again, and Naftali decides to reach out to this friend. So I was inclined to think it's probably the Rupa Mall friend. So he reaches out and he says, you know what? Ivy has blocked me, so I need you to give her a message. So the friend is like, yeah, what message do you have for Ivy? And Naftali says that he has reported Ivy to the police station, and Ivy is supposed to go to the police station because he has gone and reported her for stealing. And he wants all the money that he spent on her. And so it was a very weird story. But the whole gist of it was that Ivy needs to go report to the police station because he has taken her to the police station. And he wanted the friend to tell her this because he can't tell her because Ivy has blocked her. So the friends are like, yeah, it's fine. Like, I'm going to tell Ivy, blah, blah, blah. And then that's the end of that. So court documents state that one of the messages to Ivy's friend, which should have been a big red flag, but this is not even where the friends were like, whoa, like this guy could probably have some issues, according to the court documents that I saw. So the court documents say that one of the messages to Ivy's friends say that only death would end what he was going through with her. And Naftali claims that this is after telling the friend that he has taken her to the police station. So he claims that Ivy had insulted him and he had sued her. And then so when Ivy gets the message from the friend, she immediately contacts a friend of hers who's doing law. And she tells him, listen, there's this guy, he's been trying to hit on me. I'm a kid that I've been put up since forever. We've grown up together, blah, blah, blah. I don't really see him that way, but he's not understanding. You know, he does ABCD for me, and now he's saying that he's taking me to court. And then the friend is like, you know, just that it doesn't sound like there are any grounds for him to be suing you, so just ignore it. So later when Naftali sees that Ivy's not reacting the way that he's reacting, because what he wanted was a reaction from her, and the reaction that he wanted was that she would call him and be like, guy, no, why are you taking me to court, blah, blah, blah. So Ivy ignores this whole thing. And then Naftali later, he admits that he was lying, and of course it was a lie. He was lying in an effort to manipulate Ivy to unblock him. So he really was like, I will get you to talk to me no matter what. So now we're around April 2018, because April is Ivy's birthday month. So on her 24th birthday in 2018, you know, he decides, you know what, she blocked me, I insulted her, I lied about this and that, but I'm going to go all out for her birthday, you know, because I love this girl and I have to show her that I love her. So Ivy had planned to have her birthday at Westie in Nairobi, so she would need to travel from Eldoret all the way to Westlands. So she leaves LD and she goes all the way to Langata to a friend's house. And then the two of them are, you know, they're having fun, they're catching up, they're dressing up, they're getting ready to go out. And they're like, you know what? Just because, you know, Kenya is Kenya and we just can't be walking out here in our party clothes, let's stop at Naftali's shop. So I'm guessing this is probably one of the times where Ivy and Naftali were maybe okay. So he's like, let's stop at Naftali's shop and then we'll change into our party clothes there. And then from there, it's going to be safer to go to SD. So they do exactly that. They go, they change into their party clothes. And we don't really know what kind of interaction Ivy and Naftali had that day. But Naftali goes to Ivy's friend and he's like, you know, where are you guys going? Just tell me, you know, Ivy, just tell me where you guys are going. So the friend tells her, you know, Ivy is having a birthday and we're going to SD. And yeah, we're just going to have fun. We're going to have dinner. Then later we're going to go for drinks at this and that place. And Naftali, who had not been invited to the birthday, is like, you know what, bet. I'm going to show up. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there. So that night, I don't know if Ivy's friend told Ivy that she had told Naftali where they were going. But that night he shows up. He pays for the dinner they have. He takes care of the bill. And then after, when they're going for the after party and they're going to have drinks or whatever, they go to Brew Bistro. Again, in Brew, he pays for everything. He's like, I got you, girl. I love you. I got you. Again, as repayment for all these things, he tries to solicit Ivy for sex again. And of course, the class, by now you know what answer Ivy gave. Naftali's like, of course not. I'm not going to sleep with you. I didn't invite you to my birthday party. I don't even know, like, why are you here? You know? So Ivy's friend also claimed that Naftali would use her to reach Ivy. And I don't know why this friend did not just block the man. Because your friend is essentially being stalked by this man. This man is harassing her. This man is insulting her. And this man is, you're the one who's going to tell the same man. You know, you're the one who's going to tell her that this is where we're going. This is where we're going to be. You know, you're the one who's picking up the calls when he calls you. You're the one who's responding to the text when he texts you. It's just, I did not like that. So the friend claims that Naftali would use her to reach Ivy. And some of the messages he would send to the friend were like very persuasive. Like, just tell your friend I love her. Please try to convince her for me, blah, 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 blah. But some of them were threats. Remember, there's a text that he sent the friend and he said that only death would do him and Ivy apart, you know. So how do you not block a man like that? Why are you still talking to the man who wants to kill your friend? Why are you talking to the man who abuses your friend? Why are you still talking to this man? Your friend has blocked this man. Why is he still somebody who's actively in your contacts? You know, not okay. Not okay. So when the friend is not able to, when the friend is not able to convince Ivy to be with Naftali, because again, that kind of friend is, So when he's not able, he again goes back to demanding his money back. I've done this for you. I've done that for you. I've done this and that. And again, nobody asked him to do these things. He was doing these things out of his own free will. Nobody was asking him to do these things, you know. So he claims that by December of 2018, that he had spent around 200,000 shillings on Ivy. And Ivy was very willing to pay him the money. She's like, is this what it's going to take for you to leave me alone? Because this money you're sending me in the first place, nobody's asking you to give me this money. Nobody's asking you to drive from Nairobi to Eldoret to come see me. Nobody's asking you to take me out. Nobody's asking you to help me and my friends. You're the one who's constantly volunteering to do these things. But if giving you this money is the thing that makes you leave me alone, I will do it. So things get very bad. And then in December of 2018, she changes her number because he will not stop. It's gotten to harassment. And harassment is when a person is giving you any type of contact after you've made it very, very clear that you do not want to be in contact with this person, but they're still insisting that is harassment. So she changes her number and she said, you know, I'm going to pay you back. But then when that was not working, she decided, you know, I'm just going to change my number, just going to prevent him from reaching me. So that was in December 2018. Now, let's go ahead 4 months to April of 2019, when Ivy was making plans for her 25th birthday, okay? So the court documents that I saw say it's unclear how, but remember that she changed her number in 2018 and now in 2019, somehow the two of them have started to communicate again. But because of how, and this is just my personal opinion, I think that he's very smart, you know. He has this obsession with this girl and he's also very manipulative. If we're looking at the way he's using the friends, I wonder how many other people in her life he was using to try and get to her. And so 4 months later, they're talking for whatever reason. And Naftali again, this is according to court documents, Naftali offers to help Ivy with her 25th birthday plans. So Ivy wanted to host a party or whatever, and she had a budget of 28K. So he sends 14,000 to Ivy and then he's like, you know what? The rest of that money, I'm gonna come give it to you. I'll send it later. He said that he would send it later. But sending it later would turn out to be him again taking himself all the way to Ildi to give her the money in person. Which is, again, if you really do look at it, it does sound like a manipulation tactic to really, like, this man would have done anything, and that is not, I'm not saying that like in a good way, he would have done anything to make sure that this girl is exactly what he wants her to be, you know. if that is using his money, his time, his resources, it did not matter. All that mattered in his head was that she said yes, and she never, no matter what he did, she never said yes. And instead of taking his L like a big boy, he was like, no, I'm just going to keep trying, which is what inspired the quote from the beginning of this episode. Obsession is the single most wasteful human activity. It is so wasteful because when you're obsessed with something and it's not going your way, you're going to keep going back there over and over and over and over again, expecting a different answer, but you're never going to get a different answer. It's always going to be the same every single time. So in 2019, he's like, you know what? I'm going to take care of everything in your birthday, same thing that I did last year. And he sends off 14K and then he's like, I'll send you the rest of the money later. So now we're in Wednesday, April 3rd. And he shows up at the hostel again, unannounced. He's not told anybody. He has not told anybody. And he showed up at 6:30 p.m. And it takes about 6 hours to get from Nairobi to Eldi. It takes about 6 hours, if I'm not wrong. So he lives in the middle of a workday. But again, I guess he's a boss because he's running his own computer shop or whatever. He lives in the middle of a workday and he drives all the way to Eldoret without telling Ivy that he's going there. And he shows up at her hostel. So this is what he said. He was waiting for her at the gate. And she was very shocked to see him because, like, what are you doing here? You didn't tell me you're coming. Like, why are you here again? Why do you keep showing up without telling me? It's very uncomfortable. And again, I'm very busy. I'm a med student. I don't have time to just be entertaining people who show up unannounced at my hostel. So he invites her to come to his car. And she's like, you know what? Because you didn't tell me you're coming and I'm just coming from class, let me go drop my books and like get out of this lab coat and then I'll be right back. You just wait right there for me. I will be right back, okay? Naftali's like, yeah, okay, I'm going to be waiting for you here. And she goes, she calls her friends, she tells her friends, yo, this guy is just waiting for me. And we, you know what? They met at 6:30, but we don't know how long, by the way, because I just estimated that if he started driving at around midday noon, he might have got there at 6:30, but we don't know when he started. So we don't know how long he'd been waiting. So Ivy tells the friends, and then she's like, yeah, I'm not going out there. I mean, no, I'm not. I'm like, do you know the history that I have with this mom? Of course she's not going out there. And her friends advise her to be careful. They're like, if you leave the hostel again, make sure you leave with someone. Because at this point, it's crazy. So that night of April 3rd, Naftali stays at a hotel overnight. And he continues to try and reach Ivy. Because I guess at some point he got the clue that she's not coming back. So he goes, he stays at a hotel and tries to reach her. He calls and calls and calls and texts and texts and texts. But, you know, nothing. So that Thursday, the next Thursday is April 4th. She asked a friend to just tell Naftali to leave Eldoret. Because why are you here? I don't want you here. Like, leave my space. You know, we're 300 kilometers apart and somehow you're still suffocating me. Like, leave. So this is when her friends are like, you know what? Yeah, this is a bit unhinged. So the friends advise her that she should involve her families because, remember, Naftali's father and Ivy's mother know each other. And they tell her, you just tell your mom, mama tell his dad, you know, because maybe they can talk some sense into him. But Ivy was like, you know what? Yeah, I know he's a bit annoying, but I don't think he would ever hurt me because we've just known each other for so long. Since like I was in nursery and he was in class 2, we've grown up together. Our parents know each other. So I'm sure it's just a crush. Itaisha Skumoja, he would never hurt me. So that was on April 4th. Okay. Now let us get into the crime. So it's that morning and then it's around 10:30 in the morning. Ivy and a male friend are leaving the hostel and they're headed to class. But there are other reports I saw that they were coming from a class. So I'm not entirely sure if they were leaving a class or they're coming from a class, but they were in transit to somewhere. So according to my research, the class that they were headed to or coming from was at Moi University Mental Health Department. and the two of them were along a footpath adjacent to the hospital. They're walking side by side, and then from the periphery, the friend sees somebody raise something and aim it at Ivy. So by the time that he is turning, but it, you know, he turns and he's like, oh my God, that's an axe, and he's trying to hit my friend. So he tries to get a hold of the axe, but he's not successful. So Natalie strikes Ivy on the head, and then she falls down. And then when the friend tries to take the axe from him, he turns to the friend. And so the friend is like, whoa. And so he starts running away, but he falls just a few meters from the scene. And this is now what happened. The following thing that happened is according to the friend, what he saw. So Ivy's friend says that he saw Naftali. Remember, Ivy's lying down. She's been struck. She's lying down on the road. So Naftali goes around Ivy. He holds her hand, and then he raises the axe again and strikes her head before he gets up and he walks away. Like, tell me that is not psychotic behavior. So, and now he's walking towards his car because he's like, you know what, mission accomplished. If it's not me, it's not going to be anybody else. So people around, and it took people a minute, because who is this crazy man with an axe who's just hit a woman and now he's trying to go away? What do you mean? So people start shouting, you know, siacha toroke, mwizi, 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 whatever. And then all of a sudden there's a, and in Kenya, you know, mob justice will happen to you if you do some shit out in the public. So people surround him. And so now he's using the axe as a weapon. He's swinging to everybody who's trying to come close to him. And remember, this is a metal axe that he's holding, and it's about a meter long. So eventually, Buda Buda riders are able to, because they start throwing stones, so eventually they're able to subdue Naftali, because again, it's one man against a whole crowd of very angry Kenyans, because what have you just done, you know? So Naftali is surrounded, and then they start to beat him. If you saw pictures from the time he was being arrested, they really did a bad one on that guy. So they beat him up. And then he was rescued by a patrol officer who happened to be in the area. And the patrol officer is said to have like a little pistol yake, akajaribu to get Naftali to wield the axe. But, you know, so eventually he calls other patrol officers, and then they come, and then they rush Naftali to the hospital. Ivy is also picked up. She's rushed to the hospital, but unfortunately, she is pronounced dead on arrival. So on her 25th birthday, you guys, on her 25th birthday, this man had killed her. And the saddest thing is that they were both at the same hospital. So Ivy was at the morgue in Moi Teaching and Referral Hospital. And Naftali was getting treated at the same hospital. So according to the pathologist's report, Ivy had two deep cuts. The first was an 18-centimeter C-shaped wound involving the left side of the head in the temporal region. And this is the injury that exposed her brain. I'm sure you guys, I can still to this day, as I'm telling this story now, I can remember seeing the pictures and seeing the, it was too graphic. It was really bad. So the second was a deep cut wound measuring around 12 centimeters. This was a straight cut wound starting from the upper part of the left side of the neck, extending to the left cheek and to the left eye. And I'm guessing this is the injury that when he went and held her hand and struck her the second time, this is the injury that he gave her. So this injury was extending upwards, and it severed the main blood nerves of the back. No, the main blood nerves of the neck on the left side of Ivy's body. So the pathologist concluded that Ivy died due to hypovolemic shock and excessive bleeding due to deep penetrating cut wounds on the left side of the neck. Oh my God. So now let's go back. I still to this day, when I read about this story, I really don't like it, because I feel like there's so much that could have been done to prevent this from happening. Like, this guy was showing so many red flags, and it was just, it's very unfortunate that she had to die, and especially that she had to die that way, you know, on her birthday. So the plan, let's talk about Naftali's plan. So at this point, you know, he's killed Ivy and he's been arrested. He's been given some proper, well-deserved mob justice and he's in the hospital. So he claims that he traveled to Eldoret on April 9th and arrived at around 9 a.m. So this means that if he arrived at LD in 9 a.m., he must have left Nairobi at around 3 a.m. You know, so he's driving like literally in the middle of the night. He's going to see a girl who's expressed that she does not want to see him. She's not interested in him in any way whatsoever. So he says that the purpose of his visit was to give Ivy the rest. Remember, Ivy's budget was 28K. He sent her 14K. And now he was like, I decided to start driving at 3 so that I could get there early and give her the rest of the 14K, you know, because I love her. And I'd promised her that I would do this for her. I would do this for her on her birthday. So he drives towards Ivy at 9:30. And he tries towards Ivy's hostel and he tries to call Ivy, but he was blocked. After a while, he bumps into Ivy. More like I feel like he stalks her, like he just goes around looking for her. And he tells her that, I know I didn't tell you, but I'm here to give you the 14K that I promised you. You know, I came here earlier, I tried to call you, but I couldn't find you, blah, blah, blah. And so he says that Ivy told him that her new boyfriend would take care of everything and she did not want his money. You know, like, I don't want your money. I have a new boyfriend. Don't worry about my birthday. And he's going to take care of everything. This is what he said. And so Naftali claims that at this point, it's which year are we in? We're in 2019 and he's been going after her since 2017. He claims that this is the first time that he realizes that his relationship with Ivy was over. He's like, this is the first time that it hit me that the relationship that we never had, that was just in my head, my delusion, this is when my delusion was crushed and I was brought into the very sad and disturbing reality that this girl doesn't love me. She doesn't want to be with me. And so he says he got angry and he felt like a loser. And he went to his car and he vowed that he would never, ever, 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 ever in his life speak to Ivy again. Because how dare she? How dare she break up a relationship that they never had in the first place? So, you know, he's in the car, he's angry. He said, I'm never even going to talk to her. And so, according to him, he says that from the car, he saw Ivy hugging her male friend and in his head, he was like, she's doing that to spite me. She's just broken up with me. She's just broken my heart. And now she wants to show me that she has other men. And he felt very, very, very angry. He could not control it. So he claims that Ivy never did these things in public. But if you ask me, I feel like he just never did these things with him, you know. He would never have been allowed the privilege to do that because he would have wanted to take it too far. She probably already did not feel safe with a man who's constantly abusing her, a man who's constantly stalking her and harassing her. Yeah, she probably doesn't want to hug you. I don't care how long we've known each other. You're acting like a creep. You're going to be treated like a creep. So, and I need to say this now, that this claim that she was hugging a male friend to spite him or whatever, this was completely false. It was they did their investigations and it was completely false. This is a direct quote from this man. He says, in my mind, I felt like a loser and hopeless because of what she said. I became angry and felt bad that the connection we had since 1998 had suddenly come to an end. And I remember I was discussing this with somebody else and I told them that I don't think the obsession started in 2017. I think that from the first time that he saw her, he got bonded to her in some way. And the more that they grew up together, he started to idolize her. He started to think of her as perfect. I don't know whatever it was that he was lacking in his life, because I'm sure if we go back and we dive into his childhood, things are going to make sense. The obsession is going to make sense. And he decided that Ivy was the perfect person for him and there would never be anybody else. And I don't think he ever thought about whether Ivy thought about him the same way, you know, whether maybe she had interest in other people that were not him, but for him, she was everything. She was the end and she was the beginning. And that is a very crazy, obsessive thing that if any man, if any man or woman you know is being obsessive like that towards you, girl, run, boy, run. It's not safe. It's not healthy. It's not love. It's not love. So he says that he couldn't believe that the connection they had since 1998 had suddenly come to an end. And this filled him with rage. He was so mad. He was so mad that he went into a blackout and he lost control. So in this state of losing control, he goes to the boot of his car, to the trunk of his car, whatever. He takes out the axe. He walks up to Ivy. He strikes her the first time. The friend tries to help him. That doesn't snap him out of it. He tries to attack the friend. Then he goes, holds her hand. He held her hand. And he finally, like, gave her the blow that finally killed her. So he claims that he blacked out. He doesn't remember doing any of these things. And he claims that it wasn't until Anas told him what happened that he realized what had done. And again, this is another direct quote. He says, at that point, I lost control and was too angry because of what was happening before me, the alleged hugging that never happened. I wasn't myself again. And I can't tell how I decided to pick up the axe and attack her. You know, I was just angry. I was hurt. I'm frustrated. I've done so much for this girl. And she's going to hug another man in front of me? How dare she? So he claims when he was asked, why the axe? Why use such a crude weapon? He says that this axe was not even meant for Ivy, you guys. Let me tell you something. I work nights and I need to protect myself. So the axe has been in my car for over a year. And I just bought it because of security. Because, you know, in this Kenya, you never know. You have to keep yourself safe. At this time, it's also noted, apart from having the shop at Jamia Mall, he was also an employee of Pevensies Africa, which operates SportsPesa, the betting firm in Kenya. And he allegedly, I don't know where he worked nights. Maybe it was his shop. Maybe it was for SportsPesa or whatever. I mean, Pevensies Africa. But he claims that the axe was for security. However, investigations later found out that same morning he'd gone and gotten the axe sharpened. So that already tells me premeditation was there. This was not something that was a spur of the moment thing. You know, he was just trying to catch straws and give himself, oh my God, I was so angry because she hugged another one. Ugh, stupid. Anyway, so that is what happened according to Naftali Kinuthia. Let's talk about the arrest of Naftali and finding justice for Ivy. So when he was arrested, Naftali had the axe on one hand and he had a knife at the other. And remember, he's already told us that this axe is for what? This axe is for protection. And so because he's such because he's such a child of God, he says that, do you guys remember when those people were beating me? After I blacked out and I did what I did, I didn't even know I did it. Those people were just beating me. So the reason why the officer caught me with a knife in one hand is because one of those people who was beating me and throwing stones at me handed me the knife. They handed me the knife, which is, that was such a lame excuse, because why is somebody who's trying to disarm you, why are they arming you? You already have an axe. So why is somebody who's trying to take the axe away from you giving you a knife? It don't make sense. It doesn't make any kind of sense. So, of course, he's arrested and he is charged with the murder of Ivy. So a court document that I saw in the criminal case 31 of 2019, the state versus Naftali Kinuthia, he was charged with the first degree murder of Ivy Wangeshi. Well, I don't know if Kenya does first degree, though I do think that this man definitely deserves first degree. First degree murder is where, at least in the US, is where you're charged with premeditated murder. That means that you, before you committed the act of murder, you had thought about it and you planned it. which I feel like makes sense in this case, because if he had gone to sharpen the axe before he attacked Ivy, that means that he was thinking about killing the girl, you know? And he made sure that she died, especially with that second blow. He made sure that she died. So that gives definite premeditation, if you ask me, according to me. And I've already told you, in his defense, he claims that he never intended to kill Ivy, that he was just concerned about the relationship and he really wanted things to work out between them. He had tried everything. He claims that he had not threatened her directly. And when he heard about her death, my God, you guys, he felt such deep regret, according to him and his defense lawyers. He said that Ivy was innocent and it should have been different, which, I mean, come on. So Naftali's defense claimed that provocation, which again is something new that I learned. So they claimed that Ivy provoked Naftali to the point of Naftali having to kill her. So let me tell you guys about the provocation defense in Kenya. Provocation is a recognized defense in the law under Section 207 and 208 of the Penal Code, Cap 63, in the laws of the Republic of Kenya. And if you're able to prove that somebody provoked you to cause them harm, then you're not acquitted of the charges, but they're reduced from murder to manslaughter. So that section 208 and 207 says, when a person who unlawfully kills another under circumstances which, but for the provisions of this section, would constitute murder, does the act which causes death in the heat of passion caused by sudden provocation, as hereinafter defined, and before there is time for his passion to cool, the person is only guilty of manslaughter. So maybe the way that I thought about it, the way that I understood it, and if I am wrong, feel free to correct me, but maybe you're arguing with somebody, or maybe I'm thinking it's like a spouse walks in on the other spouse and they're having an affair on them and they get so mad. You know, I think in the true crime podcast that I listen, instead of provocation, they call them crimes of passion. So if you commit a crime of passion in Kenya, the sentence gets reduced from murder to manslaughter. So Naftali was trying to go for the manslaughter charge because he claims that she provoked him to do this. She provoked him to pick up the axe, hit her, hold her hand, then hit her the second time. And just as I've said, according to the court documents, to prove provocation, Naftali said that he had nurtured he had nurtured his relationship with Ivy since 1998. Since this girl was in nursery school, I have been trying to get her to be my wife. And he had invested considerable time, money, resources, effort. And Ivy was not being fair to him because, you know, why is she blocking me? Why is she refusing to meet me? And why is she telling me face to face that we are over, despite the fact that she's been telling me for 2 years that she doesn't want me? Like, why is she doing it to me? So that really provoked him, and he decided that she had to die. And so the court needed to decide whether his defense amounted to provocation, which I have never done any amount of law school, but there is no provocation here. If anything, Ivy is the one who should have been provoked by this man's behavior. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So the prosecution, on the other hand, stated that the two were just friends. The investigation had proved that they were just friends. All the text messages, and I wish they released these text messages to the public, but that's just me being nosy. But all the messages that these two had sent back and forth, that the investigators saw, there was nothing to prove that there had ever been a sexual relationship between the two in the 21 years that they had known each other. So, and that's why I'm saying it's giving that from the start, he always wanted her to be something more. And she just saw him as just that guy I grew up with, you know. Yeah, just the guy that my mom knows, just the guy over there. And he likes to do things for me. So court documents read, though the accused stated their relationship was initially of friendship and claimed they later became intimate, he never indicated they ever made love. The exchange messages between them do not support a deep, intimate relationship, which the accused claimed they at one time had. The evidence reveals the accused pursued her for such a relationship using all means within his disposal. All means. His time, his money, his efforts. I'm sure she took up a lot of space in his brain. But Ivy still took him as a friend. You were just a friend. You're a bro, if anything. So Ivy's lawyers, of course, they refuted the provocation claims, and they also refuted the fact that the axe was in his car for protection because he worked night shifts. And this is how they refuted. They made the following claims. So number one, the axe was new and it was newly sharpened. And the axe was not the kind of axe that if you were buying it, you would buy that axe for protection. That axe is used to split firewood. So already that doesn't make sense. Number two, there were other axes. Just as I say, there are other axes that are smaller in size and that are easier for you to hide. You know, if you're being attacked and you can just get it really quickly and defend yourself. Because if your axe is in the boot and the thief comes, so the thief will wait for you to open your car door, open your boot, remove the axe, and then start defending yourself. It don't make any sense. Number three, Naphtali had a knife which he claimed a member of the public handed him. Who is giving you a knife when they're trying to beat you and take an axe away from you? It does not make any sense. Number four, and you know what the defense said about Naphtali claiming that a member of the public handed him a knife? They said, the defense said this was laughable and asked, who would have wanted to lose his knife for no reason? Like, who? I'm just giving you my knife. For what? Like, you've just killed somebody and then me, I'm just going to give you my knife. It don't make any sense. And then the defense also brought up that if Naphtali had no intention to kill Ivy, he had the option of attacking her with his fist. Because again, he's a man. He's probably stronger than her. So he had the option of walking up to her and beating her. But no, he wanted to cause the most amount of pain. He wanted to inflict the most amount of pain on this girl. And remember that he had said in a text message that only death would do them part. So when he realized that she really doesn't want me, he decided to kill her. And then finally, Naphtali himself said he regretted the decision and Ivy did not deserve to die. This was a really unfortunate death. And this was an unnecessary death. It did not need to happen. We did not need to lose the girl, you know. So the prosecution was going for the death sentence. And Ivy's lawyer, Kiroko Ndegwa, said, I appreciate the profound judgment. As the prosecutor has urged the court, we pray for a death sentence, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. He deserves the harshest sentence possible. My client lost an innocent child, a future doctor, who would have helped the nation. In Kenya, we need doctors. You guys know this. So Kiroko also said that there had never been an apology and that Naphtali does deserve to die for what he did to Ivy. Because by there, you realize that he never said that he was sorry. You know, he only said that she didn't deserve to die and I didn't know what I was doing. So in October of 2023, 4 years, four very, very long years, after her death, the High Court in Eldoret found Naphtali Kinuthia guilty of Ivy's murder. Justice Ruben Githinji ruled that the prosecution had proved the offense of murder, which means that Naphtali had failed to prove the defense of provocation. And in December of 2023, Naphtali Kinuthia was sentenced to 40 years in prison. But if you ask me, I agree with the lawyer. He should have gotten the death sentence. He should never, ever have... I don't think he deserves a chance to walk out of jail. I don't think he's a fit member of society. I think he has a lot of issues. I think he needs to be locked up. And I think society is going to be much, much safer without him walking the streets of Nairobi and harassing any more women. And that is the story of Ivy Wangeshi. I really do hope that you have enjoyed this episode. If you have made it this far, thank you so much for listening to my first ever true crime podcast. I'm very, very excited to continue this journey. You can find me on Instagram at crimeandconsKE, on TikTok at crimeandconsKE. And yeah, that is all. That is where you can find me. So I'm so excited to publish this finally. And I will see you guys next week. Bye.